Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tire. E-Range EV tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetires.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tires.com to find your EV's next set of tires.
It's Friday, the 9th of February, and because it's Friday, it means it's the Inside EVs podcast day. Hello. I was away last week, and while I was away, all of London's weather became miserable, and Elmo was attacked by an angry man. But I am your host, Alex Goy, as ever, joined by the effervescent, wonderful, and very, very clever people that are Hazel Southwell, also off of London. Hi, Hazel. Miss Go Electric, how are you doing, Lacey?
Great. How about you guys?
All good, all shiny. And last but not least, the boss man, Mr. Patrick George. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Happy Friday, folks. And I now I'm worried about Elmo. I didn't know something had happened there. We don't need to go into it because I don't think there's anything battery or charging related with that. But I'm worried and I need to do
Larry David attacked afterwards. Him on television.
Larry David did?
Yeah.
You think you know somebody and these things happen. Terrible.
The notoriously grumpy man attacks the notoriously happy thing. Like... It's fire
that,
and ice.
That right age there. We find ourselves in, but you know we have at least we have exciting cars. It's awful. You know, at least we have exciting cars to talk about.
We need to
turn away from such tragedies.
We do indeed have lots of exciting cars to talk about. Mostly Porsche related, mostly German. So without further ado, let's jump into EV news.
EV news.
Right, so this week's big story, ladies and gentlemen, is the Porsche Taycan. There's a new one, or sort of a new one, but not a new one. There's so many headlines to go through on this. We'll probably have to go through it in lumps. We're going to talk range in more depth a little bit later. But basically, of the 150,000 sold, the feedback was we want more range and faster charging, which is kind of what they worked on. It's still based on the J1 platform. There's a new battery pack, new rear motor, a modified pulse inverter, better thermal management, upgraded all-wheel drive, better brake regen, a lot better. Hazel, I'm going to defer to you on that in a minute. It's more a standard, more toys, and a slightly tweaked, more aero-friendly design. Ranges are up across the board, at 300 miles plus for all of them, which is great. America is getting the sedan and the Cross Turismo to kick off with. The Sport Turismo is sadly not for America, which is a great shame because it looked really good.
That seems sort of TBD-ish, but I think probably no because of our pathological hatred of wagons. Like, they're being cagey on the non-Cross Turismo, just the Sport Turismo, which is like, there's, for those who don't know, there's the Cross Turismo, which is like a slightly lifted wagon that kind of looks like an SUV, you know, like it's like an Audi Allroad. And then there's the Sport Turismo, which is a wagon, you know,
it's just a standard estate, and it looks mega.
They all look good.
They all look absolutely incredible. The Turbo S is apparently the quickest production Porsche ever. It'll get you from 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds, which, fact fans, is 0.2 of a second quicker than the original Bugatti Veyron was pegged at. Power in the Turbo S is up to 938 horsepower. Prices start from $99,400 US. All the way up, if you want a Turbo S Cross Turismo, to $211,700 a snip. Let's start with that. Then we'll talk batteries and then we'll talk charging because it's all kind of crazy. So, Patrick, you've been all over this week. What do you got? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll just say too, like, can we just take a beat and think about like what an insane time we live in? Like when I was a kid, like a fast car had like 300 horsepower and you just said this has 938. Like yes. that feels like it should be a typo on InsideEVs.com, but it's not.
And it's not $1 million.
Just a Formula One car. Like, that's about 100 horsepower down on a Formula One car.
Unbelievable.
The original Bugatti Veyron came out in 2005, and that had 1,000 PS. So it's, what, 960, 970 horsepower. So this is about on par with a Veyron. Admittedly, the Veyron had it all the time because it would do the whole horsepower thing, whereas this is just when you press the push to pass, look at me, look at how much money I've got button to impress your mate, and then it doesn't do that all the time. But it is kind of mad. It's like the specs on this thing are insane.
I'd actually now that you bring up the Veyron, I'd have to look up the weight between the two because I'm kind of intrigued in this comparison and I want to learn more. But no,
this is a
neat car because, like, on top of everything else we just said, like the Taycan Turbo S is the quickest production Porsche ever made, and like coming from that brand with the crazy stuff they've made over the years, like the Carrera GT, the 918 Spyder, like the fact that this electric sedan is that it tops all of those, that's like a holy crap moment. So this whole podcast is going to be like footage. There we go. The video says footage. This whole podcast, or at least the first half of it, is going to be the Taycan appreciation cast. We got invited out to California last week, to range test, so to speak, the new Taycan. And you know, the reason they did this is there were significant upgrades to this car, as Alex said. But, you know, the original when it came out in 2019, which is like somehow like 1,000 years in EV years now, 5 years, always a fast car, but it had between 200 and 240 miles of range EPA in the U.S. And, you know, there were a lot of owners who just like thought it could have done a lot better, wanted more out of their Taycan. And Porsche's like, okay, like, we're going to throw down the gauntlet here. And they had us range tested by driving through from LA to San Diego and back. I caught this weird day where like the Southern California weather was just completely out of control. Just like rainstorms. You couldn't see anything. There were car crashes everywhere. Some nice people from Porsche, one woman from Norway, one gentleman from Germany had to stop to help a woman in Infiniti who crashed her car on the highway. Like it was just chaos out there. And even in those horrible conditions, in a Taycan 4S, I managed 296 miles of range, really only bothering to maximize range on the second half of the drive. And every other test that was done by Porsche and by their journalists was somewhere between like 330 miles. And I think Kyle Connor at Out of Spec got like 450, like hypermiling the hell out of the thing. So not only is this,
it must have been incredibly boring drive.
So we've also learned that like Kyle Connor has more patience than I do because like I have trouble driving a car that fast and like wanting to hypermile it and go 50 miles an hour in it when I could be like doing stuff to lose my driver's license. But like by any metric, like speed, range, horsepower, like this thing's a beast. And that's not all. Then they let us charge it. And I'm pulling up my data here. We went from 8% to 80, 8 to 80 in 16.16 minutes on this thing. So like that was about the max I saw was about, I think, 330 kilowatts of power from an Electrify America station that was, now granted, that was a 350 kilowatt Electrify America station. And they sort of jerry-rigged this so that one car got the entire stall to itself. Like there was no power share between two cars, which pissed off a lot of people in LA that were trying to charge their cars. Sorry, that wasn't my decision. If you were out there waiting to charge
Patrick George, care of Inside EVs, New York.
If you see me on the streets, come find me. I'll give you whatever cash I have in my wallet as an apology or something, which won't be fun, believe me. But no, it's a charging monster too. So just in every conceivable way, this really shows how far EVs have come in just a couple of years. I think it shows remarkable Volkswagen Group progress. Like this is quantum leap stuff. I know it's on a really expensive car. It's not a Bolt, right? It's not super affordable. Like these are all going to be about $100,000 or north of that. But like, wow. And I'll shut up now and let the rest of the crowd like talk about the reactions to this very impressive machine. You know.
Well, I'm keen to learn because you know were you driving a pre-prod car or were you driving a production car with some cladding on it? Like, 'cause it wasn't a launch. The car hasn't been launched properly yet. It was this drive happened and then the car was unveiled like a couple of days later.
So, no, good question. These were like almost production spec Taycans. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't camo them for our drive. They didn't really dress them up. They were all black. So it's like, you know, the visual differences between this Taycan and the old one are very subtle. So like, unless you know what to look for, you probably didn't spot them. And like, fun fact, like we parked next to a guy in a Taycan, an old, the current gen one, this fast charger. Like, oh, that's the new one. He goes, oh, that's the new one. Like, word. Like, you know, he didn't even know. And it was, he owns the car. So yeah, like these are like 90 something percent close to what you're going to be getting. They were not mules or anything like that.
So what was the drive itself like? Like, what did it feel like? You've driven the current gen one. How does this one differ? Admittedly, the aim of the game was to hypermile it, so you couldn't play. But what was the skinny?
I have to admit, I actually never ever drove the first gen Taycan. I tried a number of times; it never worked out for me. I blame the pandemic. Like most of the problems I have in life, I blame that. You know, I just it just never worked out. But like, it's hard to tell. I mean, like, we were trying to maximize range and drive and dodge just LA rain chaos, and I was trying to interview a German engineer at the same time. Like, the interior's nice; it's got plenty of power. The range is great. Like, we need a proper test at some point. I don't know if anyone on this podcast wants to volunteer as tribute, but you know, it's
getting all of us. We'll have to fight. Yeah.
Everybody.
I volunteer to drive the near 1,000 horsepower Porsche. Thanks, mate. Yeah, I'll take that one.
It's a Porsche. Like, I don't hear many people mad that they bought a new Porsche. That just doesn't happen very often. Lacey Hazel, any thoughts on the specs on this thing?
My thing that I know this is like the thing I go on about, but the regen being massively improved is like, that is part of what has really extended the range on this thing. It can regenerate up to 30% of its range. Like, that's really good. That's what we need to be seeing. We need to be seeing cars competing on how much extra can be extracted from that braking. It also, you know, it's good for so it's up to 290 kilowatts under braking. Like, that's really good.
It's 400 not... now
it's 400. Yeah,
it was
oh, sorry, 400. Sorry,
and what was your wish at the beginning of the year? Didn't you say like, I want to see more cars that have x amount?
Yes. Exactly. like this is exactly what I wanted. There to be a 600 kilowatt cars regenerating at 600 kilowatts on the road, and I think we actually, you know, this is a huge step forward in that respect. The original one could regenerate up to 30%, and obviously this is even more, and that is massively, like, this is how we fix a lot of the logistical problems of EVs, a lot of the range concerns. This is exactly what a performance EV should be doing. Like, those are stats that, although, yeah, the 0 to 60 is whatever, but to be honest, that's the kind of speeds that will make your eyes bleed and you can't do it on roads and like whatever. Whereas this is like, that's talking about like the technical, like the level of performance of machinery that you're actually getting in this vehicle, which when you're spending well north of $100,000, that is, yeah, you know, that's what you'd expect. But yeah, like, that's really exciting to me. And yes, yeah, this throws down a big gauntlet.
It's the peeling away from going, oh yeah, we can make it really fast. Yeah, that's the easy bit. Can you make it go really far? And I think that seems to be where the money has gone.
Yeah.
This time. What did your engineer have to say about that, Patrick?
I mean, they have kind of an interesting take on this that I agree with. Is like, okay, you're a performance brand like Porsche, and I think they're trying to broaden how they define performance. And I've heard, I guess it might be a German thing, because I've heard BMW say the same thing, but it's like, okay, traditionally this has meant straight line speed or handling or whatever. They've got that stuff figured out, but performance can also mean charging speeds, and it can mean range, and it can mean efficiency. I think that they're trying to be, it's like total specs, right? It could mean software performance, and maybe that stuff is not as sexy as other things, but it's like, these do matter to these buyers. And like, you're, in a way, if you buy this, you're getting one of the highest performing electric cars in almost every aspect if you get this. And I like that definition.
Like automakers forever have been like, oh, so you've got your performance Porsche. So like, you should put special fuel in it. Like, don't just go down Tesco. and you should use our Porsche range of partnership lubricants that have been specially developed for our Porsche, you know, whatever. Like, this is kind of the equivalent of that to some extent, except that regen actually, like, that is enhanced braking performance. So that is handling performance as well. Because if they're really confident with developing a really good brake mapping and a really good model for how this should be hitting those numbers on the road, then that will also be, if you take this to a track day, it's gonna brake harder, it's gonna have that performance in the corners. And again, like, to compare it to a Formula One car, like, Formula One cars, 80% of the braking is regenerative. Formula E cars, nearly all the braking is regenerative. They don't even have back rear mechanical brakes. So like, this is kind of performance technology when you're looking at those very high levels of regen.
So speaking of regen and clawing back range, Patrick, on your drive, you said in your lovely piece, which is on Inside EVs, go read it, everyone, you're in range mode, which cuts power, lowers the ride, and kind of ups the efficiency a bit. Did you get to play in other modes, or was it, or did you resist the temptation to go push to pass?
Unfortunately, did not get to do all that. My car is equipped to not have the push to pass button, and my engineer friend I was sitting next to, you know, I think he was very adamant about like getting the most range out of this test, the most efficiency. Like, you know, taught me later how to get the efficiency rating up again after I kind of borked it a little bit early on. Yes, and it's like, it wasn't that kind of party, Alex, I'm afraid. No. But like, we will get the chance to do that later. Also, like I said, driving to LA sucks. Driving to Southern California when it's like downpouring and like no one has replaced their tires in 10 years and they don't know how to drive in rain. It was just like not optimal conditions for such a test, but I think this thing acquitted itself well. I mean, like, I 296 without really trying in that, like, I would not complain if that was the most range I got out of my daily driver. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, in your piece, there's a wonderful graph of how people did. So Porsche did some internal testing, and the base car got 375 miles. The turbo got 339. The media drives, by your very rainy day in your 4S, ranges went from 365 for the base car, 345 for the turbo. It's a lot more than previously, but that was, I guess it was kind of skewed because everyone was told to drive a bit slowly.
Yeah, or like they had to, like the water rushing against the tires and just the constant stop and go because of all the accidents, like the cooler temperatures on the battery, like those things all yielded like worse results the day I drove versus other days. But I think the big headline here too is like the Taycan Turbo, it's not the top one, that's the Turbo S, the Turbo, which is crazy fast. We're talking 345 miles of range, 339. Like, these are really phenomenal numbers for such an incredibly powerful car.
Mm. So that power, I guess, is being put to good use everywhere. Yeah. One of the big changes for the car is the battery itself. So now you can have 105 kilowatt hour performance plus battery, which they say comes with a new chemical density, so it's a bit more powerful. The standard battery is now 89 kilowatt hours, up from 79, and that stands on the base car and the 4S. You know, these are bigger numbers with better energy density, so they say. Is this a case, do we think, of them going, well, they want more range, so we'll just put more battery in? Or is this a clever? What do we think?
That's a great question. I didn't get to ask about that. I mean, these aren't gigantic jumps in battery pack size. Like, Lacey, you've talked about this a lot. Like, do you have thoughts on the battery size upgrades here for this car? You know, a couple of the other improvements they made?
Yeah, I mean, I like what I see in general. I think that they are really focusing on the efficiency side of things. And if you have the space and you make the batteries more energy dense and you can fit more in there in that platform, customers want more range. So I think if you can make it work and make it more efficient, then that's a win-win all the way around. So I think they're doing everything that they need to in order to make it a really awesome second gen product. And that's what gets me so excited about these second gen EVs, is that the learnings are starting to really take form, and they're starting to make some serious improvements that will truly affect the adoption of EVs. And I know, of course, this is a high priced vehicle, but, you know, it's kind of setting the standard across the board. You know, one thing that, you know, I really appreciated your article, Patrick, because it was more of like a realistic expectation of like how a vehicle like this would perform. I mean, given most people driving this car are going to probably be accelerating a little bit harder, but on a day-to-day basis, if you're just traveling and going to work and commuting and you're in regular normal conditions other than perfect sunny California all the time, like, this is more of a realistic expectation for people, in my opinion. So I really enjoyed reading your experience with it so far, and then also just trying to game it a little bit and just seeing, like, you know, all EVs are different. When you get down to those bottom buffers, like you had been talking about in your article, you know, what is 5% to this car is different from 5% to a different EV, and how they perform and how they are, how efficient they are. And, you know, they said they made these improvements to the heat pumps and to, you know, all these different changes with aerodynamics and stuff like that. So it just seems to me like everything is going right for them in this case, and they're doing a great job with it. Now, one thing that I was curious about was, you know, this is obviously the second gen of this vehicle, and Porsche has a pretty significant stake in Rimac, and they have, as far as like an incredible technology with the Nevera, and that vehicle actually can do 500 kilowatt charging. So I'm curious as to how much, like, was there any learnings in the engineering and development of this vehicle from whatever stake they have in that company?
Yeah,
I'd be really curious to find out.
Wonderful question. And I'm embarrassed to say I thought of that after I got back from this trip, when I was talking to Chris Perkins of Motor One in the office, because he brought that up. But like, there are some more tests coming out, including in Europe, that we're doing later this year. Like, that's a question I want to ask, is like, did Rimac have anything to do with the improvements we see here? That's a very good question to ask. And like, you know, to like what you said earlier, like, one thing was kind of on my mind after I drove this was like, for years, everybody in automotive media was like, okay, Tesla's ahead now, but wait until the real automakers figure it out. And what we learned is like, it took them a hell of a lot longer to quote unquote figure it out than everybody thought. And most of them still haven't. But like, in a lot of ways, we're seeing examples of like companies catching up to Tesla or surpassing them in certain ways. Like, it's just now starting to happen. I don't mean that as a dig on Tesla at all, but I'm talking about with this car or Hyundai's EGMP cars or some of the other ones we've seen, the Volkswagen Group, like just recently. Like, we're starting to see really big advancements from the so-called traditional automakers in these cars. Like, it's really not where it needs to be yet, but like, we're in kind of this like quantum leap phase. Like you said, Lacey, like the learnings from doing this for 5, 6, 7 years now, I think in 2024, like, you're really going to start to see these take shape more than we realized. So I think that's pretty exciting to see. Like, this is a huge jump over what it used to be, this thing.
Yeah, and also, like, to Hazel's point with Formula E, like, what kind of things are... I know in the first generation Taycan, they use the same, I think, DC to DC converter or something along those lines from the Formula E cars, but is there anything more that they've integrated from their learnings from motorsport to put into this vehicle too? You know, just the culmination of all of this technology at play with all these different investments of trying to figure out how can we make these better for the consumer is really exciting.
Exactly. And especially because, like, so yes, okay, like Formula E, it's now in season 10, and initially the technology was relatively limited, because to be honest, EV technology was relatively limited at the time. But the current generation with this no mechanical braking or no rear mechanical braking, which is where most of the braking is on a race car, and the front and rear axle regeneration and stuff, and powertrains, Porsche have done really well. Like, Porsche have gone from being like just really underperforming for who they are as a company, and a little bit being like, Porsche does motorsport that isn't Porsche and takes a while to get going, to they had the powertrain to beat for the like, they were the people who got the Gen 3 powertrains right at, straight out the door, and that level of development, because it took them ages to get their Gen 2 powertrain efficient enough to not flop, bluntly. And you know, they took the driver, or they it was Porsche powertrain in the drivers' champion last year, and they went right down to the wire in terms of competing with Jaguar for who had that dominant powertrain. So I think that it's really exciting to see that kind of look like it's actually is directly seeping in with the specific type of improvements that are being made.
Interesting, because that kind of does speak to the question that we've always had about Formula E, is like, why are we doing this? Is this a marketing exercise? Is it a greenwashing exercise? Or is there really a technological trickle down effect? And I think you're arguing with some of these OEMs like Porsche, like, you're starting to really see that happen. Like, that is a real thing, correct?
Yeah. And you see it with Jaguar as well, actually. And like, they have the most successful Gen 3 powertrains. Both of them will probably lead. Jaguar has taken regen mapping directly from its Formula E cars and put it into road cars. Okay, Jaguar, for a lot of reasons, including being UK-based, are not sort of pumping out performance models at the moment. But there clearly is like something that the brands are using in terms of like a genuine testbed. It helps, obviously, the like... Formula E uses road tires. It races some of the time on actual roads, and so there's a lot more, and the cars aren't particularly more, like, I suspect that Gen 3 is probably about as aerodynamic as the Taycan, for instance, although it weighs a lot less. So there's a lot more to directly transfer from a Formula E car than there is from something that's got tons of downforce and is using slicks and whatever.
On the on the weight thing, Patrick, you were curious to know how what the weight difference is between a Taycan and a Bugatti. So I found some figures for the Taycan Cross Turismo Turbo S. That's 5,225 pounds, or 2,370 kilos. And the Bugatti is 4,162 freedom units, or 1,888. So there's a bit of a difference. There's 1,000 pounds between them, about 500-ish kilos. Just shy off.
Interesting. So the Bugatti was lighter than the Taycan.
Yes.
I wouldn't have guessed that, because I remember that. Yeah, it's also funny because the Bugatti's a tank. Like, I the fortune of driving one once, and I tell you, it weighs as much as an apartment complex. But this car, the Taycan, also, it's like it has one fewer zero at the end of its price tag too, and has, you know,
and it has rear seats, and rear seats, things in the back.
Yeah, and you can charge it at your house. So,
and you can charge it at your house. You don't. You can't put. You don't have to put in God knows how many gallons of fuel every 37 minutes, and yeah. The tires aren't filled with nitrogen and. So it seems quite weird to me when we look at the performance figures, especially where, you know, nearly 20 years ago, Veyron was 1,000 horsepower, and that seemed like the end of the world. Like, this is so powerful. How can anything ever top this? It's going to be, and then the next Bugatti on is like 1,600 horsepower, and now ostensibly a family car, you know. A well-to-do family car.
A very wealthy, fancy family car,
but they have has almost enough, almost the same power. So yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That charging rate was just insane to me, though. Like 16 minutes to get from 0 to 80%. That's amazing.
Yeah. But you do have to have the right charger, which means you have to have the right infrastructure, because they've upped it from, was it 270 kilowatt of go to now 320, which is great. But I guarantee the service station halfway up the M40 won't have a charger that can do that. So it's a nice headline figure, but it's not one necessarily everyone can take advantage of all the time.
It's pretty good, though. I mean, like, you could literally, like, this is an extremely UK/Europe thing to say, but like, you can charge it whilst you're queuing for the Eurotunnel or something. But I do have a petty and precious thing to say about this, which is, I know I said this about the Macan when we were talking about the new Macan EV a couple of weeks back, but the Taycan, it looks like a Porsche from the front, and from the back it looks like a Volvo.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is just me, but the rear of Porsches at the moment just looks rubbish. Like,
I don't like the blue font. Why did they do the blue font in the back?
It's a lot like that. It is more electronically efficient.
I hate that. I love the interior, like the cool throwback to the vintage interior. The houndstooth, yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, they've so that you can get two. So another little fun Taycan fact is there's now two more interior trims that are sort of animal free and vegan friendly and that kind of thing, which is very good. Which is a good, especially if it's an EV. But enough on Porsche's finest. How about we talk about something a teeny tiny little bit potentially more accessible? Jim Farley said they have a Skunkworks team that's working not on a new Ford GT like the last time they had a Skunkworks team. This time they're working on a small, affordable EV. That's a bit of news.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Farley, they had their Q4 and 2023 wrap up, where they announced, you know, like most American car companies, you know, doing great on gas car, gas truck sales, taking a giant bath on EVs as they ramp up their operations and work on getting them profitable and to the level they want. But Farley just kind of out of nowhere said, oh yeah, for like 2 years, we've had a secret team outside of the Ford mothership. That's the term he used. That's working on a cheap EV platform to fight Tesla and the Chinese automakers. And it was just this kind of moment. Which got a lot of skepticism on social media, I saw. And people were like, oh, that's the kind of stuff Elon Musk says. I'm like, well, you know, other CEOs and other companies, I'm not saying they don't lie, because we know they do. But it's like, I think they can just say stuff, whatever they want with as much impunity as certain people do to do that. So when he says this, I kind of believe it, you know.
If Musk had said it, he would have gone, well, we've got a small team working on it. It's going to cost this much. It's going to have this many miles of range, and it'll be out in 30 seconds. Oh, sorry, yeah. I didn't mean 30 seconds. I meant 90 seconds. Whereas at least with this story, Farley's gone, we're on it. We can't say what, we can't say when, but we are quite good at engineering. So we've put our best guys on it and put them in a shed somewhere.
Yeah, and I think the exciting thing about this, he implies that, like, they had to do this outside of the traditional Ford system of doing things. Like, all these automakers, it's like, okay, you know, if you're Tesla or whatever, or Lucid, whatever you want to do, Rivian, clean sheet design, go back to first principles. What do you want to do? Work back from there. But if you're GM or Ford or whoever, it's like, okay, here's the 80 different supplier companies we work with. Here's all the platforms we have. Here's all the hardware stuff. Here's all of our deeply entrenched way of building anything. Like, make it work with that. And this Ford project sounds like it's like, it could be like a from the ground up, just go back to zero kind of thing. I think that that's, if they can, if that's true, and if they do it, that's really novel and groundbreaking for them.
Didn't they kind of do this a few years back with the F1?
Team Edison. Lightning? That's what I'm wondering. What is the difference between Team Edison and this Skunk Works thing? That's what I'm curious about. That, because Team Edison's been a separate division since 2017. So how is that different from this Skunk Works thing? That's I'm curious about.
That's a good question. Do you want to, what is, you seem to know more about that than I do. What is, so give us the backstory on Team Edison, if you know that. Lately.
So back in like 2017, they, to develop their EV programs, you know, Ted Cannis, who's in charge of the Ford Pro division right now, the commercial division, he was basically in charge of, you know, developing their battery electric vehicle platforms. And they had to actually dedicate in a separate building. And I believe now they're at the former train station or near the former train station in downtown Detroit, in a building to work on this type of stuff, where they can really remove themselves from that traditional legacy automaker mentality, yeah, like you were saying, Patrick, and focus on developing good EVs. And so they've been doing that since 2017. And I think he was in charge until like 2020 or something like that. But now Darren Palmer's in charge of basically running all those EVs. That'd be good if we could get him on for a podcast. He's really great guy, very knowledgeable, and would be interesting to ask those kind of questions too. But basically, this was the idea of trying to develop their battery electric vehicle platforms. So this has been in the works for them to have a separate division to do this. It's called Team Edison. But how is this Skunk Works thing any different from this current team that they already have working on their battery electric vehicles? Or is it the same and they're just saying that we're really going hard in developing an affordable one because we know that Tesla and China are coming for those low-cost EVs, which is really awesome to hear Jim say that because, yeah, I mean, he's just pulling out all the stops. So like, and like you said, I believe him like you do, Patrick, but he's doing these things. Like, if you know EVs, he's taking the right steps to get to a legacy automaker to make a good, compelling EV. And the Mach-E and the Lightning are great EVs to start. I mean, they had the Focus Electric beforehand, so they have had EVs before, but these are like genuine mass market EVs that they're making that are pretty good. I mean, there's definitely room for improvement, but to come out with a low cost, and the cost cutting thing is so important with this because that's what China and Tesla are doing, but he's saying all the right things. So I think I believe him as well.
The notable thing that came out of this too was, excuse me, Ford was, Farley announced that the guy leading this project is Alan Clark, who was a long time, 12 and a half years, director of new program engineering at Tesla. And, I'll also add, you know, they Ford poached, you know, other executives from Tesla to lead software. GM this week, you know, Doug Field at Ford, they're hiring, GM announced that they're hiring somebody from Tesla to lead, you know, battery development. So it's like all the Tesla OGs are just like going to the big legacies and doing this stuff. But if I had to guess, this cat, Alan Clark at Ford Advanced EV Development, this is pure 100% a guess. So like, I do not know if I'm right. I guess Advanced EV Development, which is based in California, might be Team Edison or some evolution of it as opposed to a totally separate thing. But
sure.
I think that they've had like a secret project all along, probably doing stuff on Ford T3, which is the sort of ground up electric vehicle platform that we know they've been doing for a long time, probably for a pickup truck because Ford is smart and they know who their customers are. But like, I don't know. I agree with you. I think Farley's hired great people. I think that they're you know, like they were first to switch to the Tesla NACS plugs, got the rest of the American industry to do that, making very good hires across the board. Like, I think they're trying. Like, I feel like this company is like doing the right thing more than they get credit for. And instead, all they get is dinged on headlines because people aren't buying the Lightning as fast as they thought. And it's like, okay, if they're playing a long game here, and it's probably going to work out, I hope, you know?
Well, and to that point with the long game, you know, remind everybody, guess what contract they just signed that threw $9 billion out the door? Like, the UAW contract was significant. And, you know, that costs them a lot of money. So they got to kind of rearrange to also account for that. So it'll be interesting to see what the changes happen this year on top of that.
Patrick, you said that you know, they're probably this super secret skunk work project is probably a pickup. Is that the best way you think it is, or what do we as a group think that the small EV
I think they're separate
that Farley's talking about is going to look like? Because for you guys, pickup, yeah, perfect, works for loads of the country. For the rest of the world, no.
Yeah. I think they're separate too, and I think that it's like T3 will be its own thing. This other affordable platform will be its own thing. Probably it's going to be some commonality or relationship between the two somehow, which makes sense, right? But like the way he
Ford
talks
are
about,
making a lot of noises about not really being very interested in making or selling stuff in Europe at the minute.
At the minute, they're focused on like
Nice pun there,
they've
too.
Really
focus.
Pulled back from making money. Didn't
they just cancel the focus completely now?
Because they really pulled back, and which does make sense, because Ford Motor Company is not going to get any kind of government assistance propping up and brakes in Europe. In the so even if it's got, you know, Ford Europe exists, but if Porsche go to the German government and say, hey, can we have some money to help us electrify or whatever, or the Volkswagen Group do, or BMW or whatever, then they're going to be way further up the chain because of the volume of cars they sell in Europe, and because of the scale of operations, and because they're completely based there, than Ford's weird offshoot makes smaller cars thing, where they're like, can we really, like, Ford isn't going to sit there and develop an EV for the European market when its base market is it's being funded to do stuff, you know?
I guess I'm curious then, like, what he means by smaller EV, because American smaller and European smaller are quite different. Does this mean, you know, is there an intersect? So is it like, oh,
I reckon you're talking about like a little crossover.
Right. Like a Puma.
A Bolt equivalent.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's like, that's kind of what comes to mind, right? It's like a Bolt or a Bolt EUV, which is interesting because, to Hazel's point, Ford hasn't really played in that affordable arena in a long time. Like, they've really, in the last 10 years especially, become like the F-150 company. Like,
try and get people to overspec their trucks as well. From people who, for some reason, I think I wrote a few stories about like F-250s sitting in parking lots, and people started emailing me from F-250 and F-350 enthusiast groups. But like, a lot of the stuff they were ultimately complaining about was like, hang on, I kind of went in to buy a work truck and now it's delayed because it's waiting for luxury features that I don't really need anyway. And I'm not sure if that was specifically the delay or if the dealer was fobbing them off a bit, but like, there's definitely been an upselling of Ford stuff, as far as I can tell. I don't know if that's how the Americans.
I'm trying to game this out, right? And it's like, okay, if this were some years ago, this was a car they could sell in China as an affordable EV, but China doesn't want those kinds of cars anymore. They're going with the homegrown market. They said, hey, thanks Western and other Asian automakers for your help. Teach us how to make cars, but we got this, like, out the door. This thing could be, especially for Europe, like Kia's doing, or it could be like a sort of like defense against the day when BYD is selling cheap seals and dolphins and whatever in America. Just like, I can see, like, if those cars come to this country and they're dirt cheap, and even if they're small, people could flock to them. And this could be their defense against that. It's almost like, God help me for saying this because we all know how it ended, but like Saturn, right? Like it was GM's defense against the Japanese imports in the 90s. And like, they had a great idea and immediately just shot themselves in the foot, as GM are wont to do. But like, I'm like, where are they going to sell this thing? What's the role of it going to be? And how crucial is it to the future of the company? Or it's a Tesla Model 2 competitor, because we know Tesla's on that. Like they've said it. They say we'll see some stuff like next year. They said, but like that's one potential role for this thing, you know. So I don't know.
And what I like to hear is that not only is it a new EV platform, but they're also focusing on the software side of things. So making it very software focused, because they know that they have to, in order to make a new platform nowadays, I mean, I feel like it's almost essential that they have to just decide that they need to rework their software to be able to work more cohesively and have it be the brain of the vehicle instead of how they just add on all these different supplier components to try to make it all work together. And it's a crazy bird's nest of chaos. But yeah, everything that they're saying is just like battery, platform, software optimization, and all these things that are in the right direction of creating a cost-cutting, affordable EV. So that's very exciting.
And deciding your software and then building the architecture around it for everything. Like, I know I talk about wiring harnesses too much, but like stuff like working out your sensor arrays and what this vehicle needs to be able to deliver whatever performance you need, that's all going to be essential to not falling into the trap that we have seen Ford fall into with the F-150 Lightning, where you're suddenly struggling for parts, and there's obviously lots and lots of reasons for that, like globally logistics remain impossible, you sort of do need to build, you need to decide what the software architecture is and then work out how you can deliver that in the most efficient way in some ways, rather than trying to software engineer your way out of something where you've got a compromised array for what it should be doing.
So with this magical car, my question to you assembled wonderful experts is, what's the dream spec? So when it comes out, Farley unveils it at the Detroit Motor Show in or wherever, or CES or something, and goes, this is the new Ford tiny car or small-ish EV car.
Great
what
name.
Do you think it should? Thank you very much. It's why I'm not in marketing. but what does it need to have in order for it to, in your eyes, be a success?
Boy,
300 miles of range.
I was just going to say that 300 miles of range and charging that is, I mean, this would be dreamless, but over 200 kilowatts for a small car like that would be awesome. But that's probably not realistic. They'll probably at least, I mean, at the most, probably do 150 kilowatts, but.
Yeah, like a Bolt EUV, but better, like 25 to 30 grand, 300 miles of range, decent fast charging. And if you want to do a real kill shot, I mean, really mess people up.
Bi-directional charging.
Or this car comes out the same time as T1. Like there's the hatchback, and there's also like the essentially electric Ford Maverick truck we've made. That's also dirt cheap. Like that's the mic drop.
Oh my God, yes.
That's the real, you know. I don't know. That would be sure cool to see. But
To Carl's point, Carl
also,
is mentioning.
It needs to come. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was about to say something. I was going to say it needs to come in the. You know, there was like the pretty gay Raptor that.
Ford yes.
Made. Yeah,
it
yeah,
needs,
yeah.
It needs to come in that glittery gold. Like.
That's, yes. Oh yeah, that's that would be amazing. I love that car.
So Carl was saying in the chat, talking about the Puma coming in an EV version. Now, for some reason in my brain, I'm thinking. The Puma EV version is used for some kind of motorsport series. Is that correct? Or am I just making that up in my head?
I think that
I'm seeing in my head like a Red Bull blasted like Puma for some reason in my head.
There's too many rally cars. That's the problem.
It's used for drifting and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't there an electric?
Oh, electric rallycross as well. I think it has
something along those lines, but I think that's kind of. You know, that's what it reminds me along those sides, but I don't know necessarily if it's
might be available. Trophy, I think
available in Europe, but I think kind of
the ice trophy.
Offshoot
of
that.
So on the electric Puma, I'm just jumping on a story on the electric Puma. It's apparently going to be called the Gen E. which a colleague of mine on the internet has pointed out sounds a lot like what Forrest Gump likes to say. Lord knows what the specs are going to be, though.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that would be... I think this is going to be kind of even more advanced than what we would expect out of something like that.
So I missed a lot of that because everyone froze for a second.
Yeah, everyone froze.
So I'm just going to say, yes, very good point.
I apologize to our listeners and viewers. There was a glitch in the Matrix. It was on both sides of the Atlantic, which is rare, but it seems to have blipped us all out. No, it's I don't know. The theme of this is just like, I've been rolling my
Everyone's
eyes lately.
Freezing again.
Is it better now? Yeah.
He's freezing for me. No one else is freezing.
He is. I don't know. I think that the theme of this too is like, I've been rolling my eyes at the like EVs aren't working out headlines you see. And it's like, this is really just the beginning. These are two companies we've talked about at the high end and the low end that are working on really, really interesting, groundbreaking, exciting stuff. And it's like, this stuff is just getting started. And I know that isn't always reflected in the market you can, and the stuff you could buy right now, certainly in 2024, but like when you think about where it's going to be in 1, 2, 5, 10, 20 years, it's pretty amazing to think about, you know?
Yeah. One thing that I don't know, I didn't really talk to you guys about mentioning this before, but I got an email yesterday from Electrify America that said that they had a new charging station come out in San Francisco and it was like an indoor building.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anybody else saw that. But I just thought like for that area in San Francisco, that is like a game changer because having it be in like a, well, I mean, like San Francisco is pretty temperate, but in a climate controlled area and in a safe environment when we know it's kind of getting sketchy in San Francisco nowadays, is quite interesting to me. I don't know if anyone else saw that or thought that
it
was interesting.
Yes, we had this on Inside EVs. It's a really handsome thing they built. It's this nice building. It looks like it's like a very nice parking garage you hang out in a little bit, and there's like a little waiting area. Yeah, it's got a little lounge and a TV. It looks like a place you go to like get your tires fixed or your oil change. You just kind of hang out in the lounge, and they probably have, you know, sports on TV or something. But I'm like, this is a great idea, and we need more stuff like this. And it looks very appealing. Like, I'll hand it to Electrify America for making this, and I hope this shows up in more cities soon, because this whole outdoor charging only thing that we've had has been. It's not great for every situation, you know?
Yeah. And it just was interesting. I mean, probably cost so much money, but I don't know how they'll make their money back on that, but it was cool.
I'm guessing this is a charge hub with like a shop and stuff attached. So we have
it's more like a charge hub. It's like a little house for your car.
Okay. But the chargers are inside the house. Hmm. It's all obviously they're 350 plus kilowatt charging stations inside a building in San Francisco.
Oh, that is cool. So we have something like almost similar, I guess. So there's in London, there's a Shell petrol station that's been turned into a charge hub where, you know, you just line eight or I think 10 cars up and then you plug in, you sit inside and have a coffee and peruse magazines. And that's kind of in the middle of the city. Well, sort of middle of the city. And then there's a company called GridServe over here.
Yeah. That
their whole jam is... Okay, we'll do plugs at service stations, but we'll also do hubs. So there's one now at Gatwick Airport. There's one that's sort of in Norfolk, in Anglia area-ish. And they're essentially big old lines where you leave your car plugged in and there's somewhere to sit. There's somewhere to have a coffee. You can go to the bathroom. There are meeting rooms if you're in there for the long haul, like for an hour. So you can just sit and type away. You can meet people there. And they're really neat ideas because it does stop the whole... Here's a dingy space in the middle of nowhere that's badly lit and you're probably going to get eaten by werewolves in.
And it's great for a city environment. You know, it's hard to get DC fast charging in a city. So to then just like hijack a building and basically throw it on the inside is like, wow, okay, that's a game changer for reconsidering how that could work. Because, you know, I've thought maybe battery swapping is really the only other big solution for getting 100% EV adoption for city dwellers and stuff like that, other than like obviously level 2 charging everywhere. If we could do that, that'd be wonderful. But yeah, it's just an interesting take.
We have one more very quick story to run through before the end of our hour, and it's European from Europe. Abarth, that otherwise known as Fiat, has come out with the Abarth 600E. So obviously, you know, the Fiat 500E, tiny little EV, you know, small battery, smallish range, affordable as far as EVs go over here. There is also, so Abarth is essentially Fiat's sporting arm. Think of like the BMW M division or Audi's RS or Porsche's GT lot. Abarth's roots were in turning Fiat's from not fast cars. Someone's honking outside my door. Yes, they agree. Turning Fiat's from not very fast cars to quite fast racing things. There are some legendary ones over the years. Now Fiat sort of bought it in-house, and it's revealed the 600. Now, the 600 is essentially a Jeep Renegade, but Italian. And the Abarth version looks quite interesting. It was unveiled just the other day in hypnotic purple, which I think may be one of my favourite paint colours ever. It'll get its own body kit, bespoke 20-inch wheels, big brakes, and it'll be the most powerful Abarth ever at, wait for it, 237 horsepower, which, considering we started the show talking about a near 1,000 horsepower Porsche, doesn't seem that powerful, but I kind of love it. It'll get a mechanical limited slip diff, Formula E spec tires. I'm kind of in love with it. I don't know, but this it will launch with something called the Scorpionissima
edition. Scorpionissima.
Scorpionissima.
Rolls off the tongue.
Rolls off the tongue. Now there is a reason for this. So Abarth's logo is basically an angry scorpion. And in Italian, if you add "issima" onto the end of something, it means it's the most something. So "scorpionissima" means it's the most scorpion. Yeah.
Impressive.
Okay. Yes. There'll be 1949 scorpionissimas, which mirrors the year that Abarth was founded, 1949. Do we think it'll be as drifty as the picture they've definitely not photoshopped, or
probably not. Now, probably. I was really excited about this because it's just a silly little, probably overpowered car. Well, actually, it's fairly
sling mobile,
but like little for what passes for a small car these days. Like overpowered car with a spoiler on the back. Like every other car journalist, I am basically a boy racer at heart, and so the idea of doing donuts in a car park is like exactly what
in,
I want
in
to
your
do.
Lucky Fiat.
Yeah, exactly. But now you've said Formula E spec tires, the Formula E tires are really horrible at the minute. Like,
it might be one of those things like inspired by. I've just noticed, I'm looking at the press image, I'm looking at the press image really closely, and yes, we know it's a Photoshop, but the guy in the driver's seat is, one, leaning the wrong way to be steering that way. And also, it's got that kind of center line on the steering wheel, like race cars have. That in the top and center of the steering wheel, there's a little line, so, you know, going the right way. And it is straight ahead. So there's no way that man is steering right.
Well, to be fair, if it is Formula E spec tires, then what you do is you break the steering rod on turn one, and then you can go down straights like that for the rest of the race. So that's accurate, actually.
So he's curbed it, is what you're saying. He's massively curbed it, knackered it. The tracking's out. And actually he's...
But he's still going and he's having fun, so that's fine.
He's making the big skids. Skidissima, the most skid, in fact. Patrick, you look flabbergasted.
I love this delightful, weird, drifting purple electric Fiat SUV that was not remotely on my radar this week at all. Now just like, oh, there it is. Hey, okay.
This is a thing that will one day exist. I mean, the details on it are scant at best, but it's kind of in line. So with the Fiat 500E, which America is getting, there's the Abarth 500E, which is, you know, the spicy one. Abarth is now a wholly owned subsidiary of Fiat, so it is Fiat's M division. It didn't used to be. It used to be sort of a licensed thing, like Mini and John Cooper Works. I think that the thing with the 500, the Abarth 500D, is Fiat/Abarth put a speaker in the back of it to make it sound like a grumbly real internal combustion engine car, and it's real and it's visceral and it's definitely a hot hatch, and yeah, you're not losing anything that you're by switching to electrification. I wonder if they're going to do that with this one, because I've pretty much everyone I know who's heard or driven the Abarth 500D have gone, it's a bit rubbish, that. So
it's rubbish, or is it like awesome rubbish? Because like the gas Fiat 500 was like, it's like a Fiat 500 Abarth is like terrible, but also amazing. Like it's fast junk, you know, in the best way.
I mean, the speaker was rubbish. I mean, the Abarth 500D, the speaker thing of like people going, oh yeah, so you rev it and it goes, just a bit crap. The Abarth 500D, I've heard mixed things about. The petrol Abarths, hilarious fun. It was kind of like the influencer's station car, the influencer's second car, where you'd hear them rolling around town with four little pea shooters at the back. I remember it being singularly one of the least comfortable cars I've ever driven, the petrol one. But ho-hum, I can't wait to have a go in this, because especially in purple, I think it looks mega. And if it does drifts like that, it should be good fun. But that does bring us to the end of our hour. Ooh, there's some words I need to enunciate better. So as ever, thank you all so much for watching, or if you're listening later, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Kyle, our producer for the week, who's been making sure everything on the live stream looks shiny and delightful. If you want to get in touch with us, do sling us an email at contact@insideevs.com. For now, that is goodbye from me, goodbye from Hazel, goodbye from Lacey, and goodbye from Patrick, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.